Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here along with Shadmar Quits. We are your hosts again for this weekend show, and it was another busy week. I feel like I've been saying that even through these kind of summer doldrum trading sessions that we've been having, but great time to reanalyze a lot of the companies in your portfolio and to try to get an understanding of what direction the markets might go post-summer trading. Shad and I are kicking off the show with Mike Larson, editor of the Safe Money Report. Now, Mike, when it comes to trading this time of the year, especially this year, look, markets are slow. They are range bound. I see an opportunity for short-term traders to make some money just simply trading these swings. But when it comes to big picture, what are the main themes that you are watching for these markets that might not be prevalent right now, but it could, when we all come back from summer, from the summer session, could really drive markets?
Sure. I would say, you know, the best way to sum it up is it's a LERP, ZERP, NERP world, and we're all just living in it. And if somebody's not familiar with those acronyms, it simply means low, zero, or negative interest rate policy. And I'm referencing, of course, what the Fed is doing now and is likely to continue to do in terms of the U.S. Interest rate market, as well as what we're seeing in Japan and Europe and other sort of advanced economies. I think, you know, you've seen there was a lot of freaking out going on back in the early spring about what, you know, interest rates. So now the economy is really going to upshift. We have all this fiscal stimulus being thrown at the economy. Inflation's picking up, 2% 10-year or 3% 10-year or 4% 10-year or whatever, you know, lots of crazy targets being thrown out there. But the reality is, not just the U.S. economy, but other advanced economies are still bearing. Structural issues are still demographics, you know, in terms of less immigration, lower birth rates and so on. All these things combine to basically put a lid on how far interest rates can rise before it, for lack of a better term, breaks the economy. So what we've seen is basically, you know, in the last several months, really since late spring, early summer, we've seen interest rates drift lower and now start to fall a little faster. We have, you know, negative yields across the bond curve in places like Germany. We have the U.S. 10-year that's been getting, you know, precipitously close to 1% again after being up at 1.75% not too long ago. And you're seeing the markets react by basically having money rotate into sectors that do better with interest rates being low, quote unquote, forever. So that would be things like your utilities, your higher yielding utilities. It would be things like real estate investment trusts, which have performed extraordinarily well. It would be things like other dividend paying companies where you can beat what you're earning on a 10-year. And also something you're seeing begin to happen in precious metals. One of the biggest reasons why gold, silver, and mining shares were suffering, you know, a few months back, it's that the markets and investors were afraid of, you know, the Fed coming in and saying, we're going to start tapering our bond buys really soon. And then after that, we're going to follow it up with imminent interest rate hikes. That kind of puts pressure on precious metals, given, you know, the threat that rising yields proposed to a 0% yield in gold bar. What we've seen more recently is that pressure come off. So what's happening? I mean, you know, very quietly, sort of behind the scenes, you know, gold and silver prices have risen from their lows of a few months back. Now we may be beginning to see, or maybe on the cusp of, a significant upside breakout and a lot of catch up to be done, so to speak, if that does happen. So long story short, I think, you know, the outlook for precious metals investors is getting better. The outlook for, you know, yield seeking, safe money income investors has been good and continues to be good. Things getting better. And I think you're going to continue to see sort of this easy money environment.
All right, Mike, well, we'll especially get into the precious metals here, but I just want to kind of refocus back on the bond market here, because yields have been dropping and it's been surprising to a lot of traders because, yeah, we are down, as we're recording this, little above 1.1% on the 10-year. And that is in the face of higher inflation data. Is the bond market telling us that inflation might be transitory? And again, I guess investors are taking some defensive positions, but it's not the same sort of defensive positions we were seeing kind of in the early part of last year after that COVID washout. So what's the balance when it comes simply to this falling yield environment?
Sure. I think you have two things going on. In the shorter term, you have concerns that, okay, this Delta, not anything like what we saw in 2020 when the economy basically shut down, but maybe some lower level of activity there. Also in the shorter term, I think you're seeing a bit more political resistance to out of control, widespread, extremely aggressive stimulus spending. I mean, yes, there's this infrastructure bill that looks like it's going to pass or it's going to hit the, and get signed by Biden before too long. So there's not as much meat on the bone there when you look behind the scenes. And I think a third thing is the longer term issue. I mean, when you continue to pile debt on top of an economy, consumer debt, corporate debt, government debt, and so on, as the principal amount that everybody goes up, it takes a smaller and smaller increase in interest rates, payments on that debt to a level that the economy just can't handle. I always kind of, say when I talk to people here in the U.S., when I grew up, my first mortgage in the early 80s, I paid 16%, 17%, and so on. Why is everybody worried about a 4% mortgage rate or a 3% mortgage rate? And I point out, you may have paid 16%, 17%, but you only borrowed $60,000, $70,000 to buy that house. So when you pay a much lower price for an asset, meaning a house, and you say you raise the interest rate a percentage point or two, it doesn't have much of a monthly payment impact. But when a house costs $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, again, given what's happened with house price inflation in the last year or two, it doesn't take a big increase in interest rates to basically make that house unaffordable. The monthly payment goes up sharply for a much smaller increase in rate. Yeah, you apply it to the government's borrowing or the corporate borrowing and so on, which has gone through the roof in the last couple of years, what does that mean? It means the economy can't handle higher rates, so we're not going to get them. I think that's a sort of a big picture sort of, another term I've seen for it out there is called Japanification, because, a country like Japan's been mired in low and zero and negative interest rates for, 2.5 decades now, going on 3? We're sort of in that same boat. Europe's sort of in that same boat. That's the big picture thing that I think everybody should keep in mind as an investor.
Mike, that's an interesting point about the Japanification. Do you think that it's a situation where the Fed really didn't want rates to get too high anyways because of the huge debt burden that they hold? So in a way, they've jawboned the market down by, putting out the idea that maybe this inflation is just transitory and trying to keep those rates in that range where they don't go too low, they don't go too high. It's kind of that Goldilocks zone. But there's also the question of where is all this bond buying coming from? And with the weakness in some of the other world markets, do you think that it's foreign investors that are actually storing or parking some of their money in U.S. markets and in bonds and treasuries just as their own safe haven?
Yeah, I think, what you hit on there at the end in terms of safe haven buying and really relative value. I mean, in the U.S., you think, 1.1%, 1.2%, whatever, who the heck wants to earn that? But compared to what you're seeing in Germany, where a 10-year yield's negative 51 basis points as of earlier this year, or this week, that looks somewhat compelling, even once you take the foreign exchange risk involved there as well. So, yeah, some of it's foreign buying, some of it's domestic buying. I mean, as you get an aging population, I always kind of say it in colloquial terms, grandma and grandpa don't want to buy a bunch of tech stocks. They want to buy things that are going to give them security. So as the U.S. population ages and other populations age in advanced economies, what are they buying? They're buying safer stuff. They're buying bonds. So there's demand coming from that. It's all of these factors combined with falling expectations for future rates. If you look at where people basically in the bond market can bet on what they think the federal funds rate is going to be in 2023, 2024, 2025, and so on, all of those future interest rate levels are dropping. That means real money is saying today, I don't think rates are going to be as high a couple years down the road because the Fed, that just doesn't make economic sense. So they're basically placing bets that will make them money if interest rates in the future are lower than they thought 3, 5, 6 months ago. So all of that stuff is going on, and I don't see that dynamic changing. So again, if you translate into what it means for your average investor, it means, again, if you own gold, silver, mining shares, whatever, you're going to get less competition from the bond market, and so that would be supportive for those prices. If you own things like, higher yielding, safe money, higher rated stocks that can, even in a potentially lower growth economy, can still support their dividend and can still, earn money, those are going to be great investments. So I don't think any of this means the stock market crashes or whatever, but I do think it means the types of stocks that outperform are going to change. And I do think it means that some of these other things that have lagged, like gold, like silver, and so on, are probably going to have their day in the sun going forward.
Yeah, let's move over to the precious metals here, because as optimistic as you are about the setup here, and it makes sense with these low interest rates, fact of the matter is, I think if you're a gold investor, or just even a generalist looking at the sector, simply at the chart saying, I don't know, this doesn't look all that great over the last year of trading. Yes, we're a bit off our lows for gold, but gold is still down almost 15% from its highs just back in August. Break down why gold has lagged in your eyes when you consider just how low rates are, and if investors are taking defensive positions, why they aren't flooding more into gold.
Sure. I think one of the big issues has been the U.S. dollar in terms of how it is also flows and has basically been moving sideways to higher for a number of months here. And I think a lot of that move in the dollar has been predicated on the idea that the Fed is going to start tapering, is going to start raising interest rates, and that U.S. rates are therefore not only going to remain raised, they're also going to increase that gap. But what's started to happen in the last couple of weeks is that the dollar has lost a little bit of steam. And if we continue to get things like the somewhat weak or the really weak ADP employment report this week and so on, if the government numbers and the ADP numbers continue to weaken from their heady levels a couple months back or a few months back, the dollar is probably going to break. And that, I think, would be the last shoe to drop for gold and silver. So if you already have falling yields, you already have lowering expectations for growth, if you also see the U.S. dollar begin to lose ground, I mean, that's kind of, again, like I said, that's sort of the last component here that could really light a fire under precious metals. So that's what I'd be watching most closely, and what I think could, help gold gain its next $100, $200 an ounce if the dollar does continue to, or does lose ground and begin to fall and retrace that move higher that we had seen for the last several months.
Well, Mike, if the dollar does roll over and continue to head down, do you believe that that'll also give the rest of the commodity sector a boost in addition to gold and silver? Could that still underpin some of the strength we've seen recently in oil and some of the base metals and even some of the food commodities and soft commodities? Do you think that those would all get a bump even further, even after having a nice run and having a slight pullback?
I think the dollar declining would definitely help lend some support there. But if the dollar is declining because all of a sudden people are worried about U.S. growth, people are worried about U.S. employment, people are worried about, fading stimulus and so on, then that's going to probably favor precious over base metals. So a lot of kind of cross currents here, a lot of ways this could break. All else being equal, a falling dollar does support other dollar-priced commodities and dollar-traded commodities. But I would think that you'd get more horsepower to the upside in precious versus base in that scenario.
How concerned, Mike, do we need to be whether you're taking defensive positions, whether you are sitting in cash or in the equity markets, that a broader pullback, that almost correction or recession or bear market that it seems like we've been waiting for over a decade in U.S. markets, how worried do we need to be that that comes and it pulls down everything?
I don't think we're in a scenario where the U.S. economy is tumbling back into recession or recession risk is rising substantially. I don't think we're on the cusp of a major break in credit markets or anything that we've seen, in past scenarios. And I think part of that is just the never-ending stimulus. I mean, even in the slightest crack, we see cracks around the edge, and what happens? Oh, there's Jay Powell on the tape talking about how he's going to roll, he's going to be there and he's got your back. And oh, there comes, another expectation that Fed tapering is going to be pushed out another 3, 4, 5, 6 months. At some point, that sort of support, those types of moves won't really support asset prices, and we'll see something uglier. But I don't see that happening imminently. I think what you're likely to see is more of the same rotational moves behind the market, people buying higher yield sectors that have more resilience in a slower growth but not recession environment. And again, things like precious metals and so on. I don't think we're on the cusp of a major deflationary, recessionary break. That may come down the road, but that's certainly not what I'm looking for, this year or probably even next year.
So, Mike, when it comes to maybe the trading in precious metals, then for those investors looking at some of the stocks, which a lot of our listeners do, are you a bit more focused on, I know you like the big guys anyway, but are you a bit more focused on those bigger stocks? Because quite frankly, even the majors and some of the bigger royalty companies have pulled back fairly significantly throughout this last year or so.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think that there's probably value almost up and down the size, the food chain, so to speak. I mean, you know, you're going to see mainstream money, obviously, when it wants to buy miners, it tends to, you know, the big fund managers and so on will get into the big names first. If that trend then has horsepower, you see sort of the money filter down to the juniors and the smaller names. So, I mean, you know, it's going to be a show me environment where I think you're going to have to see the big companies, the big miners, you know, show these fund managers, hey, you can make money in this sector. And then we'll see if you get more trickle down. But yeah, I mean, that seems to be the way things work. And again, it really does depend what happens with the dollar here. Will this sort of nascent potential breakout turn into something much more powerful? And if it does, if we do break some of these important technical resistance levels, I mean, again, you could see gold up $100, $150, $200 in a pretty short period of time.
All right, final point then, Mike, when it comes to maybe portfolio management during this slow period of summer, what do you do during these summer trading sessions? Do you trim your portfolio? Do you start to get a bit more aggressive as we near the end of summer? Do you reanalyze? What's your strategy during these times?
You know, you're absolutely right in that sort of liquidity, you know, drains out of the market. There's more, it's a more sort of languid trading environment where you don't tend to see big moves. But I think if you are someone who's got some time to do the work, sit at your desk, you know, look at some, analyze some of these things that where the setups look fairly positive. I mean, again, the setups are there. And if we do see, you know, you get post Labor Day, you do get out of August, move into, you know, September or October, and some of these setups start to pan out, that's when you're going to see the big money begin to chase and, you know, really turbocharge these moves. So I think you definitely want to be adding exposure and sort of picking and choosing your spots in things that look like they have a pretty good setup, like metals, like mining shares and so on. Because if the whales and the elephants sort of come back after Labor Day and see that move, you know, gaining steam, it's really going to be pretty powerful. So, I mean, I like the setup here. I definitely think there's time for some big catch-up buying. We just need to see some of those triggers and some of those technical levels go. And that would, and again, like I said, the dollar, and that would be that would really be a good sign for a strong finish of the year.
All right, Mike, it's always great having you on the show, buddy. And I hope this kind of more broad look at the markets and positioning that we are seeing traders go into. I know that whole defensive narrative of where traders are going has been really underplayed because U.S. markets keep on touching these all-time highs. But just look at the bond market. I do think the bond market is showing us something when it comes to just how low yields have gotten, and they are still broadly in the downtrend. Mike, great chatting with you as always, buddy. We'll chat again in another couple weeks. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you. Same to you.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.